Welcome to the Fansmanship.com podcast, coming to you from San Luis Obispo, California.
Hot stuff.
He's straight out of Fresno, J.D. Scroggin.
Welcome to the Fansmanship.com podcast. Actually, the Fansmanship.com podcast, take two. And it looks like it's working now.
.com podcast.
Along with J.D. Scroggin from the Tribune. I'm Owen Main from Fansmanship.com. It's a pleasure to have you again, J.D.
Yes. From the cold-blooded city they call the No. That's a real song, by the way.
Oh, yeah? Guy,
by? You heard me say that. I can't remember the name of the guy.
Is it by a little band called These Guys?
No. But you remember The Box? Remember we were talking about late 90s and pop culture and music? Do you remember a TV show, a TV channel called The Box where you could call and request music videos?
Vaguely.
Okay, we had it in Fresno. I don't know if you had it everywhere.
I don't know that
maybe
I was
you didn't have it on the Central Coast.
Yeah, and I might not have been that connected.
Into music?
Yeah, I mean, I didn't really get into music until I was in college.
Yeah.
College was like a huge music thing for me.
In Fresno, there was a song that was popular and used to play on The Box all the time.
The Box.
It was called The City of Fresno. And the hook went, in the city.
Like over and over again. Yeah.
In the city.
There you go. That's
the city of Fresno. And then the guy would like rap about Fresno, about doing, you know, cultural things.
About the 559.
Yeah.
Yeah.
About the 559.
That's the place to be. Now I always think like Fresno Bakersfield is kind of Visalia is kind of the equivalent to San Luis Obispo when it comes to sports fans, because Fresno is mostly Bay Area sports and Bakersfield's mostly SoCal. Would you agree with that?
It's a good split. It's a good split. There's a lot of Lakers and Dodgers people.
Even in Fresno?
In Fresno. Okay. I mean, not so much the Angels and Clippers, but definitely Dodgers and definitely Lakers.
But more Giants fans than Dodger fans in Fresno.
That's probably a good split, I would say.
With the Grizzlies there, too?
Yeah. Yeah. It's probably a good split. I mean, because the Grizzlies, especially for like the older people, the Grizzlies weren't there until the mid-90s.
Oh, okay.
So, like, people who were in town before that, I mean, they're not going to jump on the Giants bandwagon just because of the Grizzlies. But it is a good opportunity to see a lot of the Giants
players.
Studs when they're coming up, the prospects, like, you know, Tim Lincecum pitched there, Matt Cain pitched there.
I travel a lot for work, and I've always wished that my travels would take me to where the Dodgers have, like, a AA or AAA team, and I could like see some games or whatever. I got to see like the Red Sox, or the I think they're the Red Sox now. They're AAA team or AA team this year up in Portland in Maine, the Sea Dogs, and saw them play. But I try to go to whatever games I can, but
yeah.
I haven't got to Albuquerque. I think that would be a fun place to watch a game. Maybe, I don't know. The Isotopes, I think, is the Dodgers AAA team. So welcome again to the Fansmanship.com podcast. And today we had a kind of a fun thing happen. What day is it today? The 20th?
Yeah.
So it's almost the end of the world.
I don't know the Mayan calendar. Is it today the end of the world or tomorrow? Tomorrow's the end of the world.
The 21st.
It was almost today,
though. So if you're listening to this, then the Mayans were wrong.
Because it's not going to get posted until tomorrow?
It'll get posted tonight, but most likely people won't like spend 30, 45 minutes, however long it's going
to
be listening.
But when you listen to it, you're going to hear us referencing tomorrow, and it's really going to be that day.
It's going to we need to plan that out better.
This is meta right here, like this conversation.
Like I said, if you're listening to it and you hear us today, which would be the 21st, I guess, but today when we're actually talking is the 20th. So we're going forward in time, kind of like a Marty McFly thing, maybe.
Yeah.
Yeah. Totally. Doc Brown. Would you be Marty or Doc Brown in this scenario? We're both the same age.
Wait, so if I'm one, you're the other, is what you're telling me?
I think I got to be Doc Brown, maybe.
Oh yeah. Well, I mean, you've heard me say this. I'm utter this phrase. I say it many, many times at the Cal Poly football games. Whenever the quarterback gets under pressure and has to scramble, I verbally utter, "Run for it, Marty! Run for it!"
Of course, the other one, if you're
and that's more a Doc Brown quote. So maybe
if you're like
Doc
10,
Brown.
And maybe if you're like 8 to 10 years younger than us, you might say, "Run, Forrest, run." At that point,
sure.
But if you're a child of the 90s and Back to the Future, run for it. And the other one that I like to use is 1.21 gigawatts.
Okay, well, maybe we're both Doc Brown then.
He's got his hands going through his hair. 1.21 gigawatts. And I certainly love some Back to the Future. Speaking of Back to the Future, there was a futuristic jet that was flying apparently over the ocean today. And I guess it caused a sonic boom that spanned from where, like Paso Robles to like Santa Barbara?
I guess. I mean, people were getting, I was seeing on Facebook, people as far south as Ventura were saying they were feeling something.
The whole Tri-County area. How does that happen? Here's what I'm picturing. If that was actually the case, which I'm skeptical of as far as like the government cover up and conspiracy theory and things like that. If it was actually a jet, I can just picture the pilot going, it's the day before the Mayan calendar is going to expire and everybody's joking about the end of the world. I'm going to give them an unexplained like rattling. And at my work, it felt like an earthquake. It was a short, quick earthquake. I mean, my desk was shaking back and forth like any earthquake I've ever been in. You were where, in Napomo?
Yeah, I was in South County at home, and I was getting cable internet installed, and the guy was having some trouble finding the wires, and so he was outside, and I was inside just sitting there really quietly. I think I was reading. The baby was napping. There was nothing going on. It was real, you know, calm.
Pretty mellow.
Yeah, real. Well, there was no sound. There was nothing going on, and all of a sudden, like, you know, the house starts shaking a little bit.
Right.
And I thought immediately, the first thing I thought was, this cable guy just went up on the roof. Like, how much does this guy weigh? Like, you know, cable guy, if you're listening to this, I did wonder what the heck you were doing on the roof jumping up and down. Because
if your cable guy's listening to this, we have far more reach than I ever imagined.
Yeah. Well, I just felt like, okay, this guy jumped on the roof. You know, right, he just hopped up there. He's looking for the cable. He's trying to figure it out. He was having some trouble, so no big deal. Then, like a few minutes later, I don't know if it was a few minutes later, maybe, what was it, like 10, 20 minutes later, I guess. Then things really started shaking, and all the windows were rattling, and everything. Yeah. It was the kind of, you know, rattling where you hear the wood creaking in the walls, and you're like, should I be getting under a doorway right now? Under the coffee table or something?
I don't mess around with that stuff.
Yeah. So I thought maybe it was an earthquake. I didn't know though. I wasn't sure. Like when I went on Facebook and I think I posted, was that an earthquake? I wasn't sure.
And I said yes
because it didn't feel like the earthquake like a month or two ago. When was the last earthquake?
It was at midnight.
It was real late. It was real late. I was watching Saturday Night Live. I'll never forget. It was Bruno Mars was the host. I'll never forget Bruno Mars Saturday hosted night. That because that was the first earthquake I really felt.
It was a Saturday night, and it was the night that my wife went down to Santa Barbara to see Maroon 5. And she was coming back, and I was like just getting ready to go to bed, and I'm laying there and like the ground shook, and then like 5 minutes later she got home. So it was pretty late that way too.
Yeah. But, well, that one like was kind of rolling. Yeah. I was sitting in the rocking chair for that one, and it just kind of rocked a little bit. The whole house didn't like rattle.
I was in bed and like my bed just went kind of just kind of back and forth for a second.
Yeah. So I was thinking this felt way worse. Right. If this was an earthquake, it must have been either really close or like really devastating. So I went on Facebook to see what people were saying, and surprisingly, not very many people were talking about it. The actual earthquake. At midnight, even, everyone was on Facebook talking about it immediately. Sure. This one, it was kind of like nobody was really saying anything.
Kind of, yeah. I mean, there were some people. There were enough.
Not
to
on
make
my
me...
feed. But there was only a few.
Yeah, I mean, there were probably like four, maybe on mine, and then it was reported for a second that it was like an earthquake, and then it wasn't an earthquake, and then
it was a sonic boom.
Who made the sonic boom? Was that Street Fighter?
Yeah.
Okay. Who was the sonic?
Guile
boom?
Wins.
Was Guile?
Yeah.
Where was Guile from? I
he
feel
was
like
from
Street
the USA.
Fighter, was he?
Yeah.
Okay. I feel like Street Fighter tried to like get a smattering of peoples from across the globe.
Sure.
Would you say that's accurate?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So you had Guile from the USA. Who else? What other characters in Street Fighter?
The characters in Street Fighter. Well, it's a sports game, right? I mean, we can talk about that on a sports.
Dude,
podcast.
We can talk about some Street Fighter. Luke's written plenty about video games.
Okay. Oh, he has. Recently. All right. Yeah, all right. Yeah, oh, yeah. Okay. Well, I need to check that out then because I'm even though since the baby was born, I'm not really a big gamer. I haven't played a whole lot of games.
Yeah.
You know, I could dig that.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
Yeah.
He's training for his job down in Southern California, and so they brought like a Xbox 360 and they hook it up to the thing in the hotel and just like that's what they do.
Nice.
After work. So
Well, let's see. Characters. Street Fighter 2.
Is the standard.
The one. Yeah. Like Street Fighter 2 is the one that everyone played that sold out everywhere, that everyone had. Like
I can remember two. Ryu.
Okay.
And Chun-Li.
Okay.
Because they each had their own kick. It was the Ryu kick, right? And then there was the Chun-Li kick. Because that was like the more feminine kind of like swinging around, spinning, kicking in the face. What other characters were there? I don't remember.
Well, there was also Ken, who was the white Anglo-blonde carbon copy of Ryu that also did the Ryu kick. Was that what he was saying?
Ryu kick. I don't know. That's kind of how it sounded. That's my best.
I couldn't understand what anyone were saying. And then when they did the fireball though, it was a Hadouken.
The fireball. Yeah. Okay. Okay, that was a Hadouken.
I think so.
Okay. I don't know. I got nothing. I don't think I played as much as everybody else, but I did play it and I did experience the majesty of Street Fighter 2.
Yeah. Well, it was definitely Street Fighter 2 was the one that everyone knows. Street Fighter. Like Street Fighter, the original, nobody ever played
that. Was there a Street Fighter 3 that came out when we were in like high school? Like early in high school?
I don't know. It's a good question.
I remember playing it at somebody's house one time.
Yeah.
And I was like, this is cool, but I'm not very good at it. I was a button masher.
Yeah. Well, I think at that point I was more into the lives. Like NBA Live 95.
Okay.
And then it was like NBA Live 96. Or like Madden, oh, that doesn't, or something. That doesn't rhyme, you know? when it was Live 95, it rhymed. And then 96. And then they just dropped the date and they just called it NBA Live.
Right. And I think when I got into high school, playing sports started being like something that was a little more demanding of my time, too. So
not as much video games.
Well, yeah. And I never had a video game console until I was probably like a sophomore or junior in high school. I always went to my friend Miles Davis, the guy who does our LPMD, and Miles always had the, like the Sega or whatever. So I'd run up to his house up the street.
Sega.
Resistance is futile. Sega. Mm-hmm. That was one of my favorite Sega commercials. So yeah, I mean playing sports definitely didn't allow me as much time, but. I have a question for you, and it's kind of a random question. I've played hoops with you and stuff, and you're a pretty tall guy, pretty lanky.
6'2" and a half. Actually, my last measurement, I was closer to 6'3", but that was early in the morning. I think over the course of the day, I think I shrink.
With your arm length, you're like 6'4".
Okay.
You're a good like 2 inches taller than me.
I have above average wingspan, I think.
Yeah, you're like 6'4", 6'5", arm length-wise. So.
Yeah. We did a measurement on one of the girls from the volleyball team on my website, my blog site. And we measured her arm span.
Kate Walters from the Cal Poly volleyball team.
We did an interview with her to measure her arm span because she's kind of a shorter setter, but she still gets up there and blocks. So I wanted to measure her wingspan. We did that. And then afterwards, I went back to the office and all the people in my office saw the video. And then they were like, oh, do you still have your tape measure? I'm like, yeah. Oh, yeah, let's all do it on each other. So we measured all of each other's like wingspan. And yeah, mine came out a few inches longer than average. Yeah.
Because I think generally speaking, if it's how tall you are, that's about average. Maybe one inch more or something like that. I think I'm like 1 inch, 1 or 2 inches less than how tall I am. I have really short arms.
Yeah.
Like a T-Rex or something.
Mm-hmm. I think when I think Owen Main, I think T-Rex.
Yeah. Does being tall help you with your job?
That's an interesting question, Owen. I haven't really thought about
it. That's the deepest question I thought of for tonight.
Does being tall help me for my job?
Like, do you feel like coaches will look at you maybe and say, I mean, this is the way I was thinking about it. Like maybe a coach looks at you and says, oh, that guy's tall. He might have like, played a sport at some point. And we know that that there's something to that.
Maybe I get some street cred for just being tall.
Just being tall or big. Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know. What do you think?
I look at it this way about my height. Here's my philosophy on it as far as the way I look at things. I judge other people based on myself. So if anyone I ever meet is taller than me,
right,
then I'm like, whoa, this person's really tall.
Right. They must be because because you're taller than the average bear.
Yeah. I'm almost 6'3".
Yeah.
So when I meet someone that's taller than me, I'm like, whoa, they're tall. Right. But then the flip side of that, anyone who's shorter than me, it's like I look right over them. It's like I don't even notice their height. They're small. You could be an inch shorter than me and I completely discount you.
Or you could be 5'5". You could be six feet, or you could be 5'5", and JD thinks of you as the same height.
Yes, exactly.
It's all just shorter than me or taller than me.
Exactly. Yeah, okay. Pass, fail.
Okay. All right. So do you think like coaches or other people like look at people that way, or look at you that way as you're talking to them or whatever? Like, do you feel like at first anyway, like first impression wise? I mean, that helps you, or does it affect you at all?
I think more so it's if I prove that I know what I'm talking about with my words. If I'm asking questions, that make it sound like I know what the ins and outs of the sports are, then I think that has more weight than whether I look athletic or not. I don't think I look that athletic. I'm kind of, you know, I'm kind of pudgy for
you and me both.
For an athlete,
I'm pudgier than you are, son.
So yeah, I don't think anyone's going to confuse me for being like a prime star athlete or anything. But I did play basketball in high school, just to go back to my roots. Yeah. We're talking about high school.
Yeah.
I played basketball in high school all 4 years, and then I coached 3 years as an assistant and freshman coach at my high school.
There you go.
So I do know a lot about, more about basketball strategy than I think the average writer would, just because of
just kind of coming in,
playing and coaching. Right. So not only did I play, but like I have a good understanding of what the strategy is and why coaches make some of the calls that they make, why they do what they do, and why they devise some of the schemes, game plan the way they do.
I've had a similar kind of experience to you, and I coached for, you know, assistant coached in Florida and back here for a few years at the high school level. And sometimes I think to myself that it would be easier for me to like make a valuable, like a big picture judgment on a team or a game that's coming up or something like that, to make like a prediction on it, or just like be able to step back if I hadn't had that, like, because I feel like doing that, it gives you like a partial understanding, but then I'm not at every practice, and I'm not at, you know, I don't know exactly what they're talking about. I know generally, you know, I can kind of get an idea about what they're trying to do, but sometimes I feel like having a partial knowledge of it, of exactly what they're, what a team's trying to do is sometimes harder to judge that team than if I had no knowledge coming in and I just came in and kind of just sat down and watched it and just kind of took it all in.
Yeah, well, because you can see both sides of it. You can see the perspective of the coach. So you want to be critical, but then you're like, well, I get it. I get what he's trying to do.
Right. like football this year, I guess, is an example. I mean, I come in with like zero triple option knowledge, but then I watch this thing and I can, you know, I can kind of with fresh eyes kind of see trends or whatever. And next year is going to be probably harder for me to like pinpoint trends or whatever, than it was this year. Also, when you have a good team, it's easy to pinpoint trends. When you have a team that's struggling that you're covering, it's, you know, kind of, there aren't really trends except, you know, the struggle. Speaking of teams that aren't, that didn't struggle, Cal Poly football had a really good year this year. And we talked right before the last game. I just wanted to wrap it up with you. They went to Sam Houston State and they lost by 2. And now Sam Houston State is in the championship game. They beat 3.
You think Cal Poly would have been in the championship game if they won that game?
So that's my question, right? Like I posed it to Cal Poly fans on a forum, like, okay, guys, are you guys frustrated? What does it feel like right now? Are you guys mad? Are you okay? Like, are you angry? I don't know. Are you just kind of like, oh man, what could have been? Because it was a great year and everybody's super appreciative. You know, Deontay Williams had, you know, the second best season in Cal Poly history, rushing wise. Andre Broaddus was a senior and he capped like a really nice career. You know, one of the better quarterbacking careers that's happened recently. And yet, like, you see this, like, oh man, we could have been like this one or two steps more. And you start to kind of like wonder, is it something that can be sustained, making the playoffs year after year? I mean, Sam Houston's been there now. The national championship game is their second year in a row. South Dakota, it's a matchup of last year's, right? It's a rematch.
Rematch, yeah, definitely.
South Dakota State.
Mm-hmm.
And so you start to wonder, can those things happen? What's your take on like the woulda, coulda, shoulda?
Yeah, I think Cal Poly would have had a good chance to beat Montana State that next week. Yeah. But having seen them get pounded by Eastern Washington in Cheney earlier this year, it's hard to say, well, they would have beaten Eastern Washington too, and they would have been in the, you know, Cal Poly would have beaten East Washington because they would have had to have played a lot better than they did against them the first time to beat them a second time. So I don't see that in my mind happening because I saw that first game and I'm thinking, man, Eastern Washington was tough. I mean, they were really good.
But Eastern Washington also had a crazily horrible first half against Sam Houston. I mean, I thought Eastern Washington talent wise was, you know, the best team that Poly played all year, even maybe more than Sam Houston. I mean, just when you talk about skill positions and receivers making amazing plays, I want to say that Eastern's quarterback that played against Cal Poly didn't play for a lot of the Sam Houston games, so I don't know what Eastern was trying to do there.
Well, they have a two. Well, this year they had a two quarterback system,
a lot like Sam Houston State.
Yeah, where they played quarterbacks, you know, and one game one guy would play the whole game, and then another game the other guy would play the whole game. Sometimes they would switch them up at, you know, different points in the game. You know, guy would play it till them one point, then they would sub another guy in.
Yeah,
it really was bizarre, and I was kind of interested in seeing Eastern Washington win. Like, I kind of would have wanted them to, if anyone else could win, you know, I would want to see them win, just to see that two quarterback system win. And then all the people who say two quarterback system doesn't work, say, like, well, there you go. There's the exception to the rule right there. I mean, it was so, the way that they employed each guy, it didn't seem like there was any pattern to it at all. It was just,
and the guy that played Cal Poly seemed to be the more dynamic guy. He could run a little bit. He obviously tore up their defensive secondary throwing. One thing that just kind of struck me in Cal Poly's last game was how great their defense played. You know, when you talk about seniors, Kenneth Jackson, Nico Molino, I'm trying to picture, there was one or two others on that defense, right?
Maybe. Those were the senior guys.
The two seniors. I mean, you talk about going out in a really, like, they don't have anything to hold their heads down about. I mean, they played about as good, solid a defensive game as you could ever play.
Yeah,
against a team like Sam Houston
State. That was
the
best defensive game I've seen a Cal Poly team play
ever, right?
Since 2008. That's when I started covering the team in for the 2008 season. That's the best defensive game I've seen a Cal Poly team play.
It's incredible.
In 4 years, and 5 years,
and considering
eight, nine, 10, 11, 12. Yeah, 5 years.
That they're two starting safeties, neither one of them played, right?
Well, I mean, Matt Riza played. He took over the starting spot.
Hubbard
didn't go.
And Dave Douglas.
He started the season as a starter, but then kind of lost his job. But he was like the nickelback. He was like the first DB.
Okay.
When he was healthy, he was like the next guy off the bench, kind of. So, you know, they were without two of their top five defensive backs.
Flowers had a huge game. Gross had a huge game. DeZubnar had a huge game. Cameron Onko is going to be really good.
Yeah, he'll move into the starting lineup next season.
And DeZubnar
will probably move to the middle, yeah.
Right, and I mean, you talk about just a linebacking just tunnel, like, you know, just a river of linebackers coming through. That's something that definitely Cal Poly fans can look forward to.
They'll have even more depth, too, because they have some other young guys that haven't played yet.
At all, right?
That will provide some good depth there. I think that's going to be a strong...
So you
area.
See Walsh, like, starting to really, you know, increase their depth, increase. I mean, they had to deal with injuries all year is kind of a something that I think gets overlooked. Guys who are dinged up or nicked up or whatever throughout the year, and that extra week kind of, I think.
They were pretty healthy, though. They got dinged up towards the end of the year, but they were pretty healthy as far as the year as a whole.
Yeah.
There weren't very many season-ending injuries. Only a couple
like
in
I
the
said,
preseason.
Dinged up, though.
Yeah, it was, but I mean that happens in football. If
and
you're
you still
a football
have to,
team, you pretty much know you're going to have some devastating injuries throughout the year.
And you still
it's
have
guaranteed.
To win through those. You have to have a guy to step in. I mean, the offensive line was pretty devastated for a few games, right?
That was when it got tough. Towards the end of the year when Mike Freeman and Carl Winkleman went out in the
Sac
same
State,
game.
Eastern Washington.
And then that's when they started losing.
Right.
And, you know, I don't want to put any blame on any one guy or two guys that had to come in, but you definitely saw a drop in the success.
Put it this way, those guys who got hurt were really good.
Yeah.
And they were veterans. And in that triple option, Broadus not having those veterans in front of him, you know, it's gonna affect somebody. Yeah. So,
now those guys that came in and played are gonna be a little bit more veteran next year for having that experience.
Yeah, I'm excited about next year. I think, you know, one of the fun things, and I talked about this with the basketball team, and I'll kind of segue here with the men's basketball team. But one of the fun things I always feel like with college or high school, I feel the same way as far as watching guys develop, because at that level. And especially at the level Cal Poly is, you're not talking about, you know, mostly you're not talking about like freak athletes. You're not talking about like high Division I level, you know, crazy like UCLA basketball kind of athletes. You're talking about guys who have to like develop and whose game sometimes develops over time, like Dylan Royer on the basketball team.
Yeah. Or you get the crazy athletes in smaller packages. Like a Sean Lewis, you know.
There you go.
If someone with the athleticism of Sean Lewis was a couple inches taller,
right.
I could have easily seen him playing in a major conference somewhere.
I feel like Criston Ivory is kind of like that too. He's really fast, right? And he's just a little bit small, maybe. Is that kind of a, I don't know. I feel like he turning the corner wise, like he's super fast.
He's a good example of what I'm talking about, right. of a great athlete in a smaller package.
Exactly.
Because he's shorter. He's a little squatter though. Like he's right. got some
leverage.
Strength uh-huh. to him. Well, I mean, he was in high school. He was a league championship shot putter.
Okay.
If you can imagine, you know, yeah. you don't necessarily think of like small guys being great shot putters, but I mean, he was the best on his team, best right. in his league. As a shot putter, right. so he's got some explosive legs,
right.
definitely,
right.
and some speed. So he's a unique combination, I would say, of size and speed and explosiveness.
Right.
And he just is a shorter guy, so yeah.
smaller package.
So yeah, but that's the guys you got to find. You got to find those guys that have the supreme athleticism, but right. but just are overlooked.
But you're also going to have guys who have kind of, for this level anyway, kind of more average athleticism and are at the same time developing other, you know, their skills along the way. And you kind of get to watch that. And you get to see like Chris Eversley beginning of last year to end of last year. You get to see guys, you know, really make strides. And for some guys like Eversley, it's a switch that gets flipped. Other guys like Dylan Royer, it's kind of a progression over time, right? They get a few minutes in the Big West tournament as a sophomore, right? You know, made some shots, stayed in the game. The next year, it kind of gives him confidence. And this year, he's taking, you know, probably the second most shots on the team as far as like volume wise. He's a key contributor offensively. You can watch a guy like that, and you've watched Royer since high school. So
yeah, since he was like a sophomore.
I think that's one of the fun things about covering, I guess, amateur sports, you know, whether it's college or high school or whatever, being able to see that progression, right? I mean, it's gotta be at least interesting or keeps it intriguing. Yeah. And by the same token, then you get to see, okay, next year, there's always a next year that could be so much different. Better, worse, you don't know how these guys are going to change in the offseason because yeah. they're 20 years old. And so they could get, Malik Love's got a broken foot. Maybe he comes back and shoots, you know, 35% from the three-point line. I don't know. You know, maybe that's all he does is sit there and shoot threes. You know, you see guys who get hurt in football, but they come back and they have some kind of new athleticism or skill because that's all they've been able to work on over time.
I think in football and basketball, the examples you give, it's more projectable. I think you can kind of tell what they're going to be when they come back. And it's easier to project and say, this guy's going to do this next year. This guy, there are breakout stories. There are. But the sport that I look at most that has what you're talking about, exactly what you're uh-huh. talking about, is baseball.
Okay.
Because there's so much turnover with the draft. And Paulie usually has, you know, like four or five guys go on the draft every year. They have to reload, and every year there's guys that just break out where you didn't see them play very well because the year before, and then all of a sudden, boom, here they are. Yeah, or they didn't play, or they didn't play well.
Right.
I mean, they played a lot and didn't play well. Like, for instance, you know, Mike Miller, when he was a sophomore, transferred from Cuesta. Shortstop, transferred from Cuesta, played his sophomore year at Pauley, and had a horrendous start to his sophomore season, and, you know, he got pulled from the lineup, didn't play the rest of the year, and then came back as a junior. And then, boom, he was hitting 400 for a lot of the year.
Yeah,
and then senior year, I mean, he was still on.
Right.
Like baseball, you have these guys that just, for whatever reason, just boom, come out of nowhere. Jeff Johnson, the closer, was another guy who's recently like that, where he was just kind of a, you know, he was a reliable.
Closers in college baseball come out like that too, out of the woodwork.
He was a reliable reliever, you know, and then he fixed some mechanical stuff, and then boom, all of a sudden he's throwing 95, and he has a killer splitter,
right.
and all of a sudden he's a top five round draft prospect. Like that was out of nowhere.
Yeah.
You know, like, and in baseball that happens all the time, and you can never really predict who the guy is going to be, like, which, you know, someone's going to break out, but you never really know like which guy it's going
to
be.
And it takes a little bit of time to realize who it is too in baseball. In other words, like you see a pitcher throw a good couple innings, maybe you're like, okay, but then it happens like 3-4 times in a couple weeks span. You say, okay, maybe this is happening halfway through the season. It takes you like a little bit more time, I feel like, in baseball to like realize it if you're watching. Even if it's your job to cover it, you say, well, you know, is this just like a good little run, or is this going to be happening all season? Because baseball is kind of that long, drawn out season too, right?
Sure.
Yeah. One example of that, I think, and I don't know what this guy played with in Little League, Rocky Roque, who was a closer, I think, at Pauley for a year or
two. When he was in the minors, he was repeatedly on those lists of like best names in the minors.
Yeah. His brother's name is Rusty.
Nice.
So Rocky and Rusty are, you know, from Cayucas, and I, you know, played Little League with both of them.
Rusty, is that short for Russell?
No, it's
or was
Rusty.
His
it's
name
Rusty.
Actually Rusty?
Yeah, he was a trainer in the minors for a while. You know, went around a couple places, I think. I think he's up in the Bay Area now. Yeah. But yeah, that Rusty and Rocky were the
interesting.
Yeah, they were both really good athletes. They went to Mission, both of them.
Uh-huh. I ask because I was listening to an interview with Hugh Jackman recently, promoting Les Mis.
Okay.
And he was talking about how, you know, he plays Wolverine in the Marvel Comics movies. And he said that the role was originally intended for Russell Crowe, but for some reason Russell Crowe couldn't be Wolverine. So then Rusty, as he called Russell Crowe Rusty, he says, then Rusty put the director or whatever onto Hugh Jackman, and then Hugh Jackman obviously took the role.
They're both Australians.
Yes. There you go. And but I just thought it was interesting that Russell Crowe, who's known for being this cantankerous kind of like rude fellow, has friends who call him Rusty.
Yeah, I like that.
That jumped
like
out that. To me. Then I was like, "Whoa, that's kind of interesting."
I always feel like
and sportsy
too. Yeah. Yeah, exactly. This time of the year is kind of interesting for me, just because I'm not like the hugest small college football fan. When I didn't have a lot else going on, like I would sit and hang out and watch a lot of bowl games at night, like on a weeknight in December. But I'm not kind of there right now, life-wise. But and so this time of the year, sports-wise, is kind of meh for me.
Yeah, you're not going to watch the Pickled Pig's Feet Bowl or...
Yeah, the...
Any of those?
The Poinsettia Bowl, you know, the other... The Poinsettia Bowl is the other San Diego Bowl, so there's two bowls.
Besides the Holiday Bowl?
Yeah, the Holiday Bowl is a fun bowl. I've been to the Holiday Bowl back when Joey Harrington and Major Applewhite squared off the Ducks and the Longhorns, but...
One of them's a good coach now, and the other one's an analyst.
Okay.
Of,
and I think Chris Sims was a freshman that year. And so he was like, you know, they were kind of like toying with platooning them. And I think the Ducks took the Longhorns in that game. But Texas travels strong, you know, bowl-wise. They had, you know, the whole, you know, probably half the state. And Oregon does too. It was really fun. So this time of the year is kind of weird for me. The Lakers are like, you know, mid-season. Nobody really cares until Christmas. Are you an NFL fan?
Yeah, definitely. Not really an NFL fan, but I have an NFL team.
So I don't really have an NFL team. I used to like the Rams back in the day, and I used to hate the 49ers. And then the Rams moved, and I just kind of gave up on having a team, which is actually makes my NFL fansmanship kind of fun because I can kind of just watch whatever game's fun and say whatever I want about it. The Niners are obviously having an interesting year.
Yep. I you know, was a huge 49ers fan growing up in the 80s and 90s.
In Fresno?
You know, yes. They were like the team, you know what I mean? Joe Montana, Jerry Rice, like, you know, how could you not jump on that bandwagon?
Are there more Niner fans or Raider fans in Fresno?
It's another split, you know. And even back then, see, this is counter to your point, you know, that when the Rams were in L.A., there's a lot of Rams fans.
Really?
You know, yeah.
In Fresno,
yeah. So even though they were in Oakland before that, you know, there's... I'm telling you, Fresno, you think of it as like Northern California for some reason, but I think of it as being pretty close on the north-south parallel with San Luis, where you're kind of in the middle.
How far away are Fresno and Bakersfield?
Couple hours.
Is it a couple hour drive?
Yeah, it's not close.
So Bakersfield,
and you know what? People from Fresno are like look down their nose at Bakersfield.
Well,
like
sure.
And people from Bakersfield, I think, look
up their nose at Fresno.
Well, I'm just saying, like it's not like community. They're not like we're in this together. We're in this bad valley and crappy air quality and poor economy together.
You think of it maybe, you know, closer than it maybe is, because it's about the same drive to get to either one from here. You know, it's similar anyway. But Bakersfield is very clearly connected with LA.
It's closer to LA, yeah.
It's very clearly connected to LA. There's not a lot of Giants fans in Bakersfield. There's not a lot of
probably not
a lot of Niner fans in Bakersfield, although probably since there's no LA team, there's maybe more.
I think Fresno's more split. It's more even.
Okay. I always picture Fresno connected to the Bay Area for whatever reason.
Not necessarily.
Okay.
I think it's more split than you think it is.
I'll have to do a word on the street. I'll have to go down to Fresno.
Go to Fresno and just walk around. Yeah. Well, I mean, Fresno State obviously has a huge presence in Fresno, too.
Sure.
And, you know, I think for a lot of people, maybe people like you that don't have a pro team can really Fresno latch on to a college team. Yeah, and Fresno State you can latch on to.
Fresno State has a pretty good fan base, yeah?
It has been good. I mean, the economy's so bad in the Valley that they've lost a lot of, you know, ticket buyers.
Season ticket holders and just ticket buyers
just
in general?
Just ticket buyers in general.
Really?
You know? Yeah, I mean, in the early 2000s. You know, and I know there were some recessions and stuff back then, but
the David Carr era.
Yeah, even before David Carr, I mean, there were, you know, it wasn't sellout, you know, complete to the gills every game, but it was solid and the fan base was good. In the late Pat Hill era years, there was a lot of like distaste, and I think part of it, I think, was because the team wasn't
as good as they wanted
it to be. But I think also part of it was the economy.
They're starting to turn it around, yeah.
The football team, yeah. they had a turnaround season this year,
right?
At Fresno State, yeah. They're going to play in the Hawaii Bowl this weekend.
Does Pauly play at Fresno next year?
Yes.
Okay, they play two FBS games next year. Yeah.
Yes.
I think Fresno State and is it Colorado State?
Colorado State. Yeah.
Yeah, up in Fort Collins. Mm-hmm. So that should be fun.
Yeah.
Check that out, and
yeah,
I'll have to get you to show me around Fresno State. I'll have to like follow JD and.
You gonna go to the game?
Yeah,
that'll be cool. I'll give you the grand tour of Bulldog Stadium. I'm sure I'll be invited to some tailgates.
I heard that's a pretty rocking stadium when it gets going.
Oh yeah, definitely,
yeah.
Definitely. And you know what? Like the tailgating scene is awesome. You know, like you when you grow up, you know, going to those games and you see what the tailgating is like there.
Right.
You know, you just think that's normal or whatever. But then you go to some of these maybe smaller FCS venues and it's just not as big. It's not as a deal to
go. We walked around in Wyoming and Wyoming's trying to amp it up, but it wasn't huge. There were like some tailgates and there was some really cool examples of like tailgaters that are getting after it with really cool like trailers and stuff. But
yeah, but you go to Fresno State and you go, you know, 4 or 5 hours before the game and there's, you know, bounce houses and big screen TVs and people are there tailgating and cooking and you know, there's radio booth set up and everything.
I know you spend a lot of your pregame time at Cal Poly, you know, preparing for the game.
Yeah.
But you see some tailgate stuff.
Growing. It's growing. It's growing, definitely, right? At Cal Poly.
And the Stampede Club's a really cool thing. But I've also heard like rumors about moving the tailgate. It's actually something I'm hoping to have Don Oberhammer on sometime in the next month or so. It's something I'll ask him about. But
Donnie the Obe.
The Mustang Way.
Yes.
I think is the Twitter handle. Like, what are some things that you think, like, that you see at other FCS stadiums that you think could because you do go to other places. Yeah, what are some things that you
see? Cal Poly's in a weird spot because of the stadium, you know, just where it is.
There's not a lot of, like, open space or parking lots right next to it.
On one side, you have the train tracks, so you can't really go that way with tailgates. It's as if there's a cliff and it just falls off 100 million feet. So there's nothing, you can't do anything that direction. In the other direction, there's buildings. There's parking lots, a little bit kind of surrounding them, but they aren't like
well, they tried to use them 2 years ago, but I was told that because of like ADA stuff, they had to not tailgate that close because they needed those spaces for handicap spots. There's also the places that are kind of up next to the buildings, and I think those are the parking lots they're maybe looking at, and then I'll ask Don about it when I have him on. But that seems like it would be a really cool place, kind of above it, and you get a little bit of a view of it. I don't know.
But then you're talking about uneven terrain, walking. You know, it's not ideal. It's just a weird placement for a stadium if you want to create a big, you know, grandiose tailgating.
It's a cool stadium as far as the setting. When you're in the press box, you're looking out over the whole campus, and you're looking out, you know, over the hills. It's a really picturesque. Yeah. Kind of a setting that way, but tailgating wise, it's just really hard.
If you're Cal Poly, you need to find an area and you need to just own it and say,
put up
this is where the tailgate is, big signs, lots of music,
everybody knows,
get people to go, and then get people to go hours and hours before the game, like build it up that you know, this is where you need to be you know, to celebrate leading up to the game. And I don't know if you do it, maybe you do it with some concert music, but you got to have something to entice people to make that part of their culture. Because right now it's not a part of the overall culture of football at Cal Poly to come hours before the game, set up at a tailgate, and then just party.
I also think the hard part is not competing with yourself, because you have this great Stampede Club barbecue with beer and whatever you want. You know, there's so, you know, great food. Sometimes they have like wine tasting next to it and stuff. I mean, it's a great like venue that is right next to the stadium.
Yeah, well, that's good. That's for the boosters, though.
But and season ticket holders.
Yeah.
So season ticket holders get to go there. But what I'm saying is, you don't want to, like, those are also some of the people that might tailgate on their own. Potentially, season ticket holders are the guys who are going to get pumped about tailgating, and so you have this great service that you offer for your season ticket holders. But then you don't want to compete against yourself by like putting a, so you put a band up there and now your guys who were season ticket holders are just buying single game tickets and maybe not coming sometime, you know, so you got to think about it that way too, maybe. And I would imagine there's got to be a balance at some point or a way to do both.
Well, here's the people that are missing from the Cal Poly fan base. You have the boosters and season ticket holders, you know, same people. Those are like the 1%, you know, people. Like those are like the, you know,
the people who can afford to do that.
Yeah, the upper class.
Okay.
Okay, then you have where there should be a middle class of fans.
Okay.
You just have the students. So you have, there is no middle class of Cal Poly fans, I feel like. You know, there's, and it's partially because it isn't a program right now that is attracting people from the community that just live here.
Hmm.
It's either boosters and former students.
Hmm.
And then current students.
Huh.
But there's no middle class of fans that would come and populate a tailgate kind of a thing that wouldn't be part of the Stampede Club, but would come and tailgate. And I think that's an exposure thing, I think, because Cal Poly still has an image problem in Slo County where people don't really understand the level of football that's being played. The
level of athletics.
Yeah, they don't. Yeah, they think it's Division II still, or they don't even know what the difference is between Division II and one AA FCS,
or they resent the student population in the town, and so there's lots of that. Yeah.
So it's, you've got the boosters, and then you've got the students, and you depend on them to fill the stadium. And I think what Cal Poly could do better at is attracting that middle class of fans that isn't students, that isn't boosters, but that would appreciate, you know, FCS football. And I think getting on TV, getting on KSBY. Is all part of getting more exposure and attracting those kind of people, because once you see it on TV, it legitimizes it in your mind, and then you.
I want to go there. Like, oh, that looks like a fun thing to go to.
Yeah, let's take the kids, and then you know you gain fans that way. Because Cal Poly has tried to say before that it's the, you know, University of the Central Coast, where we can pull people from, you know, whatever Monterey County all the way to Santa Barbara.
Santa Barbara, yeah.
Yeah, but in reality, does that happen? No, not really. But, I guess they could get more people.
Is it as simple as a bounce house?
I don't think it's as simple as a bounce house. But it's about branding and like getting awareness out there. About
bounce houses, too. Like,
well, I did mention bounce houses. Well, right. Yeah.
But you're not the first person. Like, I know that when Cal Poly did their spring game, they had a bounce house.
Yes, they did.
And I have a mutual friend who took their kid to the bounce house. Then they went to the spring game for a second. Or whatever. So,
it's a good idea.
I think it's a great idea. Yeah.
It wasn't just the bounce house.
Okay. Tell me, because I wasn't there.
That thing, that little, you know, I don't know what to call it. It was kind of like a tailgate. It was a tailgate, pretty much. That tailgate was promoted as the event, like an event to go to. Like it wasn't just come to this, then go to the game. It was like, this is the event, come to this. And
the
this
game
is what
happens to be happening.
Yeah, and then the game's going on across the stream.
I mean, it is just a spring game, but
yeah. But this is what I mean about branding, you know, the tailgate. Mm-hmm. You know, like get an area. This is the area. This is where it's always going to be. And there's going to be music, and there's going to be this, and there's going to be this attraction, and this attraction, and attractions. They're called attractions because they attract people, and so you have to market it as like, this is the tailgate area. You need to be here hours before the game.
Yeah,
there's food, there's music, there's games.
Yeah.
There's radio, you know, remote.
Right.
There's all this stuff. This is the center. Go there and then build the culture of tailgating. And if that's something that's important to the university, they can do that. If it's not, then they won't. If it's something that's important to another booster club, then they can try that, or they won't. I mean, but it has to be in concert together, and they really have to make it a part of the culture of the fandom.
Right. Definitely. The fansmanship culture. The culture of on-campus fansmanship. I mean, that's what it is to use the name of our site as a noun, right? As an update, because it just happened, Cal Poly basketball played at Washington tonight. They lost 75-62, which is, you know, it's within the respectable range for sure as far as keeping it close. They were down by about 9, I think, at halftime, and so they kept it kind of right within that range. I don't think they were ever able to make a run though, in order to get where they needed to get as far as that goes. I'm opening up the box score right now. I know Eversley was, like usual, kind of the rebounding leader, put up 23 and 5 tonight. Only three other players had 2 rebounds, and Cal Poly was only had 17 rebounds for the whole game. They're out rebounded 30-17.
Yeah, I think you're just looking at that score only, which is what if anybody who's even gonna really delve into it very much is just gonna look at superficially the score. Yeah. They don't lose any face, I don't think, with that score.
Not at all.
Like you said, it's in respectable range. Uh-huh. I think we're getting to the point in the Cal Poly men's basketball season right now where the preseason, the win over UCLA was great. The rest of it has been, it's been below 500.
I use the word meh to the MEH because beyond the UCLA win, and I said, that got everybody fired up, but the three games that I circled as kind of like toss-up games, because you think the St. Mary's game, the St. Mary's game, the UCLA game, the TCU game, and the Washington game are all against, really, really good programs on the road. Those aren't games you really expect to win. Now, certainly they beat UCLA, and that was really cool. Yeah. But then there's the three toss-ups, the Northern Colorado, the Nevada, and the San Jose, Santa Clara, right? Where those are all winnable games for a team like Cal Poly is this year. And they won one of those games, but they dropped 2 of them. And so it's kind of like, well, if they would have won 2 of those games and beat UCLA, then it starts getting kind of exciting. They have maybe a 500 record going in. They're not getting beat by a lot. Maybe they played decent. I think they played decent defense tonight. Washington shot, never mind. Washington shot 51% from the field. And
well, I think if you're Cal Poly, unless you're, you beat UCLA and you're 8-2 or whatever in the non-conference, anything short of that doesn't matter.
Yeah.
If you're not on the verge of getting ranked or if you're not, making waves in that way and getting high in the RPI and all that stuff, then once you get to conference play, like we're going to get in a couple weeks at the end of the season or at the end of the year, and the start of conference play in the Big West, the rest of the non-conference doesn't matter at that point. Yeah, like I said, the UCLA win's great, but all those non-conference games doesn't really matter. Then all that matters is what you do in the Big West to set yourself up for the Big West tournament and then how you do in the tournament. So we're getting to the point almost where you just flush everything that happened in the non-conference.
And that's what Calero will say. He'll say, it doesn't matter. We have to play tough teams. Yeah. And this is going to get us ready for conference.
It matters to fans because fans want a winning team.
Sure.
But in the grand scheme of where their season is headed, once you get to the conference play, unless you're someone who's, if this goes for all mid-major teams, unless you're a mid-major team that has a realistic shot of gunning for an at-large berth, then your non-conference doesn't really matter. It just doesn't.
Then that's what Calero said recently when I interviewed him after a game. He said, I something to the effect of that. It doesn't matter. Our goal is to win the Big West tournament. We have to be playing our best basketball then. Let's keep the focus there, and we're getting better and so on and so forth. Which, like you said, it's not like the instant gratification that the fan base wants, but if that's really what ends up happening, then okay, great, right? So you have to almost take it as a year-by-year judgment on a particular team, and they've gotten better every year that he's been there, record-wise. And last year got to the second round of the tournament, is that right? Of the Big West tournament, right? Okay, cool. And lost to Santa Barbara. And there you go. Eversley's really good. Really good.
I agree. Yeah. I'm nodding, but I'm sure that doesn't come through on a podcast kind of thing.
He's a junior. Eversley's he's a junior and put up 23 tonight, 22, I think, against Santa Clara. He's averaging like probably 7 or 8 rebounds after tonight. He got 5. He was averaging 8 coming in, I think.
It's good to see that he can score 20 plus. But it obviously, you know, it's kind of like Kobe in a way. Like, just because he scores 20 plus doesn't mean they're going to win.
Right.
Just because Kobe scores 40, right, it doesn't mean the Lakers are going to win.
Right.
They need other guys too. Right. You know, yeah, they need big contributions from him, but they need contributions from other guys too. He can't do it all by himself. But it is today, good to see that he can score 20 plus, because they went all of last season and nobody scored 20.
I wrote today that kind of there's like 2 sure things on Cal Poly, and they're kind of like the big guys. They're Eversley and Brian Bennett. Those guys, I think you're going to get solid outings. Bennett had 8 points tonight. He only had 1 rebound, but he was playing against a 7-footer in NJ. And so, you know, he's a freshman. So that's going to happen against Washington. I don't think he's going to have any games in the Big West where he only gets 1 rebound this year. I would really be really surprised if that was the case. He's 6'9 and active. But I wrote that it's going to be really interesting to see the rotation, because Calero's been playing with his rotation the last couple games. The first few games of the year, it was kind of either or with UU or Johnson. Tonight, he started both of those guys, and he's playing UU at kind of a more traditional 3 rather than a 1.
Yeah. Well, did O'Brien play?
O'Brien played. He didn't start.
Yeah,
well, and he had it back.
He's been kind of hurt,
he only played,
right?
11 minutes. He's got a tight back, I think.
Yeah.
But now you're starting to see, okay, you know, Johnson's playing, and then Audister's coming in for him. And you're seeing like a lineup that has Audister, Morgan, and Royer all in the lineup at the same time, which offensively is probably at least shooting wise from behind the arc, like a really good team. But kind of trying to make a group of 5 guys dynamic offensively is still something that he's and defensively that can sustain is still something that Calero is really playing with. You saw like a group like that get really hot for a while against UCLA, where Royer and Audister were on the court at the same time. But beyond that game, there hasn't really been a lot of time when both of those guys are kind of in the game and firing. So is it going to be an either or with them two? Audister had 9 points again, 3 of 8 from 3 or 3 of 6 from 3-point range, 3 of 8 overall. Audister's not afraid to put it up, a lot like Royer's not afraid to put it up. Between the two of those guys, then, are you shooting too many threes? You know, there's lots of questions there, and it's going to be really interesting to see how the backcourt develops over the course of the year, and who's getting time at the positions 1 through 3, right? I mean, it's and there's no real answer now. I wish I could say like this is the way they should go, but I don't know. I mean, they've been kind of struggling to kind of stop and start the whole year, it seems like.
Yeah, well, I mean, there's the against these kind of teams, you know, the high major teams in the non-conference, you can't really judge their performance and then apply that to how they'll perform in the Big West, because you're not facing the same kind of length and athleticism. So,
right.
So, you know, offensively, yeah, you know, they're struggling against the TCUs and, you know, Washington's. You know, they did get hot against UCLA,
right.
But you really, it's a whole nother season when they're playing the conference games. I mean, it sounds like I'm speaking the company line or whatever for Cal Poly, but I'm really not. It's just something that I've noticed in my years of covering the team is it really gets interesting when you get to conference play, because there's sometimes teams will have terrible records, like a Long Beach State right now. They could come in the conference and dominate and then run away with it.
They are the one team that's always longer though.
That is true.
Yeah.
But you just don't know yet. And I mean, who knows? Maybe Long Beach hasn't gelled the way people expected them to with all the new faces, and maybe they don't take off in the Big West. Like, it's going to be really interesting for me to see the other teams in the Big West. How good is Santa Barbara? I don't really know.
Right.
You know, I'd like to see, you know, how good is Long Beach going to be? I don't really know.
Santa Barbara's
Hawaii, how good are they going to be?
One of the youngest teams in the country, Santa Barbara. So I think you're going to see like some of the same teams might be at the top, but you're definitely going to see kind of a shuffling. I'm doing like the traveling call here, like you throw all the teams into a cylindrical tube and turn the handle on the side, and they're all going to be kind of jumbled up throughout the Big West. I wouldn't be surprised if a team starts off like 1-4, you know, and then like ends up being a top 4 seed in the conference. Like, this is
that
the kind
could
of
be
year
Pauly, because they start off playing Long Beach State and Irvine
Long
in two
Beach,
of their
Irvine,
first 3 games.
And Long Beach and Irvine are 2 of the top teams in the conference by far.
Well, they should be on paper, but you don't know yet until they start playing. That's why it's really interesting when they get to that conference.
Right. Northridge is going to be good. Pacific's really, you know, Pacific's solid. You know, some of these teams are Pacific beat St. Mary's. on a neutral floor. So you see some of these kinds of like on any given nights, and it's going to be.
But
really
then Pacific got pounded by St. Mary's in a rematch. I don't know if you saw that
at St. Mary's.
Yeah.
I mean, at St. Mary's is a hard place to play, Mr. Scroggin. I was there and it was like hot and nasty. It was raining outside and it was still like hot and muggy and nasty. Like they're trying not to pump any of the air out.
Maybe because they have so many Australians, maybe they're trying to make it, because isn't it like summer right now in Australia? Maybe they're trying to make it like the Australian guys feel at home.
You know, the point guard, Dellavedova on St. Mary's, that guy is really good, but he's got to be so frustrating to play against. You watch, I mean, I don't think he was either not at 100% last year or didn't play when they came to Mott. But you watch that guy and man, he just gets all little angles, gets his off arm out just enough not to get called for a foul, but has still, you know, still he's the one initiating he's like, you know, he's like the point guard equivalent of Reggie Miller, right? Where
he's savvy.
He's like Andre Miller. That's who he's like. He's like a better shooting Andre Miller.
Andre Miller was pretty good in college, man. I don't know that Dellavedova is quite the accomplished player that Andre Miller was at Utah.
Really? Andre Miller get to a Final Four?
I'm pretty sure he was on the national championship team, and if he wasn't,
wait, Utah won a national championship,
or not the national championship, the national championship game. Didn't they get to a championship game?
I want
to
say, yeah. Was he on the same team as Van Horn?
Yeah, okay. I think so. I think he was like a freshman or sophomore.
So Miller and Van Horn.
If he wasn't, he did get to a Final Four at least one year. And
with Majerus.
Yeah, it's kind of hazy because this was my high school years, and you know I was a Fresno State homer at that time.
Was that the Tark years?
Yes, those were the Tark years. So and they were in the WAC. Utah and Fresno State were in the WAC. So, you know, I had like a skewed view, but I do remember Andre Miller being very, very good. I mean, he was like a potential player of the year candidate. I mean, I don't know if Dellavedova is like that accomplished at this point.
I'm just saying
don't undersell Andre Miller is what I'm saying.
The style of play makes me picture Andre Miller, because Andre gets all the little, you know, he gets fouls called and he's a decent free throw shooter, but he can't shoot the ball from the outside anymore. Maybe he did at Utah. I think he was
more on like really good on the break in college.
On the break, and then like again, like even in college, just having the angle and being able to like get guys on his hip and keep them there and play at different speeds. I think at the college level, that's a really cool thing to have. And he is the starting point guard on their national team too. So
yeah, well, I think watching him, Dellavedova, not Miller. I mean, watching him. As just from a spectator standpoint, he shoots when you don't expect him to shoot, and he doesn't. He passes it when you don't expect him to pass. It's kind of like he's in a different gear. He makes really good decisions, and it's really hard to sort of pick up on what he's going to do and when.
It's the change of pace, change of speed, and it was a big lesson for this Cal Poly defenders. And I guess this is to come full circle and to probably wrap it up here. It'll be interesting to see what lessons from the preseason this men's basketball team carries, and whether they do improve against a player like that. Because while there's probably not a point guard like Dellavedova in the Big West, there are good point guards in the Big West, right? While there aren't 7-footers like Njai in the Big West, there are going to be big guys.
There will be next year. Did Irvine get that big 7-foot guy?
I don't know. I haven't seen. Did they?
Yeah. Mamadou something. He actually was at a Cal Poly game, that guy.
Oh, I remember.
You know who I'm talking about? Where's he from? Like Huntington Beach or something like that? He's going to high school.
I remember
because
you said that guy's blah 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 from blah blah blah, I think. Or he was like 7 feet, and I said, JD, who is that guy? It's kind of when I first started coming to the Cal Poly games.
Yeah. Well, he signed with the Big West team.
Okay. He signed with Irvine.
I think it was Irvine.
Okay. Well,
I don't have I'd have to Google search.
But he's not
NJI.
But he's not NJI. You know, he's not like a.
He's a mid major player.
Right.
He's not a high major.
You got
player.
It. So.
But he is tall.
So then you've tested yourself against these guys. You've learned something from playing them. Are you carrying that over into conference, or when you play a team early in conference, are you carrying that over into the second game to maybe seal? Like, so, you know, hypothetically, you lose to Long Beach the first game. Are you playing them better the second game?
Yeah.
And they've had Long Beach at home early in conference each of the last couple of years, which is a tough scheduling wise. That's a tough thing to have, but it's just the way it goes. But I think it'll be interesting to see how much they actually learn from what happens early on when they play teams later on.
I think that the coaching staff has proven that they are very good when playing someone the second time around. Uh-huh. I think the coaching staff, Coach Calero, in particular, does a good job of scouting the other teams once they've seen what they have. So You know,
he talks a lot about film work.
Yeah, it doesn't really show in the Big West tournament, I don't think. it hasn't shown the past couple of years, but in conference play, they've shown that they can really do a good job of tailoring their matchup zone to their opponent, especially in conference play. So,
do you think in conference play, maybe it's kind of like you can toss up and win a game at some point in the tournament? It comes down to kind of the more nuts and bolts. Like, do you have guys who are gonna, kind of be heroes maybe? And that's kind of like, you see other teams that really kind of step up and do that. I mean,
you're in a different arena,
right?
You're in a big arena. Right. It's just a different atmosphere. It's not the same as a regular conference game, even though, you know, it's different than even a road game, because both teams are at, in this big stage that they're not used to playing in. So it's just different. I don't know if it's like these, that Pauly doesn't have the heroes.
I don't know if the heroes, the guys, it comes down to are you like Orlando John or not? Yeah. Or are you,
do you have a guy who can hit NBA shots? Well,
right.
Sometimes. I mean, if it comes down to a close game,
right.
And if
which
you,
it usually
you
does have, in the tournament, you right?
Have a, yeah, sometimes yeah. If you have a guy that can hit the game winner with the, seconds winding down, then
not that that's what happened, that's but it's like, is that happening? So anyway, kind of a random question, kind of off to the side, but something that's interesting.
Sonic boom.
Right, you kick. Hopefully there aren't any more sonic booms. Hopefully you are listening to this at some point. JD, thanks for coming by. I know it's kind of a random podcast tonight, but it is.
I like being live, though. Live and in studio.
Yeah.
It's better than being on the phone.
Yeah, the phone's hard.
Here and looking at you and being in the studio.
You know why else the phone's hard? Is because it's not like a landline. Cell phones, if you're talking, you can't hear what somebody else is saying. Old school landlines, somebody could interrupt you and it was okay. Like, you could hear that somebody else was talking, but on the cell phone, you can't. And so,
so you never hear when I'm talking, you just talk over me.
Right. Or vice versa. And if I want to jump in and interrupt you, I'm not allowed. And so it gets a little goofy.
You shouldn't be allowed.
I know.
Even face to face. That's kind of rude.
It's kind of rude. Are the Lakers going to turn it around? 1 minute or less. Go.
The Lakers. I hope not, because I'm a closet Warriors fan. And if the Lakers don't turn it around, then it's just more opportunity for the Warriors to get back in the playoffs. So I'd like to see the Warriors get back.
The Warriors are
going to
make the playoffs.
They look like it now, but you never know.
New ownership.
It's a long season, Owen. I think they're number two in the Pacific right now, behind the Clippers. So they're in good standing now. But you never know. There's injury. I mean, it's a long season. So, but if the Lakers lay in the weeds, and the Warriors, that's better for the Warriors. So I'm hoping that the Lakers don't turn it around.
Will they?
I don't know. I'm not a big enough expert to know whether they will or they won't.
But you love them.
I'm not going to pretend to be an expert on something that I don't know about.
Oh, man. I was hoping.
That I would pretend to be an expert.
Who's the Warriors coach?
Oh, good question. Mark Jackson.
That's right. So do you think they've turned the culture around there maybe with the new ownership, Mark Jackson as their coach? I mean, it seems like that's what's kind of happening there. And, it's about time.
They're still not playing any defense.
Well,
as evidenced by their 130 to 120 loss to the Kings.
But nobody's really playing any defense in the NBA anymore. It's players are so prima donna that they don't want to play defense. And so since nobody's doing it, nobody needs to do it.
Yeah, but you can't give up 120 plus to the Kings.
Miami's the best defensive team when they want to be, and that's why they're the championship team.
I was like, okay, if you told me the Warriors lost to the Kings, I'd be bummed. But if you told me they gave up 120 plus points to the Kings, then I'm searching the Kings roster saying wait, how can they even score that much? Who is scoring points on that team?
It's true.
Yeah.
Who knows?
That was a tough one. But a big showdown between the Lakers and the Warriors this week. That's going to be a good one to watch.
That'll be fun.
And to see, are they the real deal? The Lakers are kind of coming around a little bit.
Maybe Nash will come back. Gasol's back in the lineup.
Yeah, Lakers had a big win in Phoenix without those two guys. Philadelphia without those two guys. Uh-huh. So they might be coming back around. But
they beat Charlotte.
I hope they beat the Bobcats
with Powell by 1 point.
I hope that they don't, and then then the Warriors can have a good season.
So you and Luke can Laker hate together.
I don't hate the Lakers. I just know that I like to see the Warriors do well, and if the Lakers aren't doing well, somebody has to.
Okay, speaking of,
so
speaking
more
of
chance
Luke,
for the Warriors.
Speaking of Luke, who couldn't be on tonight.
Yeah.
Top 10 is Kobe in the top 10 players of all time.
Of all time.
Yeah.
Ooh, that's a good question. I don't know. We have to kind of do the top 10.
Yeah, here was Luke's top 10. I'm just going to read it to you. Because So he had MJ1. This is Luke's, not like the well. Like I think a lot of people would have issues. He said MJ, Wilt, Oscar Robertson, Bill Russell, Magic, Kareem, Bird. And I think then you start to get a little potentially off, because he said LeBron at 8, Olajuwon at 9, Duncan at 10, or excuse me, Shaq at 9, Olajuwon at 10, Duncan at 11. He puts Kobe like 12th to 14th. My argument is that Kobe probably belongs ahead of LeBron right now, ahead of Olajuwon, and ahead of Tim Duncan. And so maybe 8th somewhere in there.
Because of
the impact he's had. He has 5 championships. He's
because of the championships.
I think that's one main reason. He has more points, I think, in his career already than maybe not than Duncan, because Duncan's been around, but than probably Olajuwon and and obviously LeBron. Now I think LeBron can pass him
pretty easily. Leapfrog him with
a couple more championships or something like that. And LeBron maybe does that. But I think all time players and impact and being in LA and all the things that go along with that, I put Kobe in the top 10.
I think if you put just sheer raw points plus the championships together,
and he's been playing since he was 18.
I mean, the other guys who you would say might be ahead of him. You just look at the evidence and you're like, do they have the points over him? No. Do they have the championships over him?
No.
Right. Then what are you going by?
Right. Right. They were great in their time. That's why they're a top 15 player of all time. But you know, you look at Kobe and it's like, yeah, well, just greatest players ever, I guess. And I think Kobe's attitude plays a lot in terms of what Luke thinks about, you know, as far as that goes. And he's going to be, he might be mad that we're talking about his top 10, but this is something I was going to bring up with him anyway. Yeah. So,
and he couldn't come on.
Would you put Shaq ahead of
Kobe's
though?
Kobe's very European, you know, because he was like raised in Italy. He only came to the US to play high school.
I use this term because Kenny Smith called him a basketball butthole. And that's the greatest description of Kobe ever. Maybe not a butthole in real life, but a basketball butthole.
Well, like when you think of, you always hear stories of Americans going to Europe and then like the French people, they meet to treat them rudely. Uh-huh. Like that's what I picture. I picture Kobe, like if I saw Kobe in Europe, he would be rude to me because I'm American. So like he exudes that kind of tude.
Right.
So that I think that maybe that might be one reason why he rubs them the wrong way. There was also obviously the sexual assault case against him.
Yeah.
That can Luke rub actually, people the wrong way. So, when you're on trial for rape, I mean, that can rub people the wrong way.
So Luke's actually down in Orange County and he saw Kobe at the mall last night. And he was like, so that was that's what got
so
the,
he ran
said
into
hi to
him.
Kobe. Yeah.
He said hi he said, to what's him, up, even Kobe though he Kobe. Hates him.
Yeah. Oh yeah. He said he was a nice guy.
But I don't know.
If you're on the court.
No. If you're going to hate somebody for their demeanor, you can't just be like, I saw them in the mall. They're cool. Yay. You have to be like, you have to like fully commit to hating them. Like you have to be like, oh, you have to say jerk. You're a jerk.
Like point, like wag the finger at him.
Well, maybe you don't have to say, hey, jerk,
like
you know,
the
like you don't have to yell
up.
Maybe you don't have to yell negative things to them, but you don't have to put on a smiley face and act
like what's up, Kobe?
You're kind of betraying yourself to put on a smiley face and act like a fan when you really are not.
Interesting Totally. calling Luke Johnson out. JD Scroggin.
Well, I don't know how much he dislikes
Breaking
Kobe
news.
I haven't talked to him about this,
he doesn't
so I don't
like Kobe at all.
Yeah, well, I'm just saying if that's someone who you really dislike, then you can't act like a fan when you meet them just because you saw them.
Okay.
You know what I mean? You can't, you have to be like, I don't like you. Nah.
Yeah. Okay. And he goes with the group and he's like, that's Kobe Bryant, you guys. And they're like, no, it's not. And he's like, what's up, Kobe? And there it was.
Yeah.
Whatever. Yeah. So that's that. So you think he does belong in the top 10 probably all time? I mean, there's probably other guys that you could probably think about putting in the mix, but
like I said, when you're gathering that group of guys to say, this is my top 10,
right,
you have to have some criteria, right? You can't just say, well, I feel like this guy should be in the top 10 because I like him a lot.
What's interesting about that list is that Charles Barkley said this at one point. He said, Tim Duncan's the greatest power forward of all time, but he's not in the top 10. He's not better than maybe the second or third greatest guard of all time, or the second or third greatest center of all time. It's kind of an interesting concept about the power forward position. There were so many great power forwards in the 90s, our time.
Karl Malone.
Malone, Barkley. For a while there, I remember all the guys that Robert Horry had to guard during the Lakers runs. Chris Webber, Karl Malone, Charles Barkley on the Suns, Kevin Garnett, Rasheed Wallace. These are guys, that were in their prime at the time. And I remember thinking, man, he's got to guard one of those guys every night. I'm trying to think of who else there was. There was a good guy on the – Jameson was on the Warriors maybe. Not that that was like anything. But the Sonics maybe even had a good power forward. Anyway, power forwards were – there were a lot of good ones, but none of them on championship teams. It seems like the championship teams always had like you know, serviceable, solid guys, but not maybe like the great ones, like Horace Grant, who was really good, but, you know, not a Hall of Famer, or Robert Horry, or, you know, somebody like that. I see you nodding your head.
All right. That you should write a book about that.
I should write a book about a lot of things.
But Owen's personal philosophy on power forwards.
Honestly, I have these thoughts.
By Owen Main.
Yeah, you guys probably don't want to hear them. It's been a good podcast, JD. I appreciate you coming over. Remember, you can download the Fansmanship podcast on iTunes, and you can also rate us on iTunes, which we would appreciate. That would be awesome if we got like some ratings and stuff. So feel free to do that. And you can read JD on the Tribune,
SanLuisObispo.com,
or his blog is also there, Blogging with Scroggin.
Yeah, you could also it's just a little slow going on the blog these days, but yeah. You can also follow me on Twitter at Slow College Beat.
Yep. And you can follow us at Fansmanship, and we hope you have a fantastic day. This is the Fansmanship.com podcast on Fansmanship.com.
Old JD Scroggin, he's a super driver. Thank you for listening to the Fansmanship.com podcast. For more news, opinions, and podcasts, go to www.fansmanship.com. I've been stuck on down in trouble town. It's a lonely place, it's true. Street lights so bright, they blind my vision. And the people on the streets, they beat me up till I'm black and blue. Front page of the news.